Welcome to the Guthrie America podcast. We sit down with the amazing people who do life in our community and who are from here. We believe every story should be told. I'm your host, Hedy Coleman. Today, I am sitting down with Jeremy Hazelwood, a.k.a. Jermo.
It can be. That actually came from a Guthrie classmate, and sometimes it carries through. So if you're from Guthrie, I guess so.
Yeah.
Other Guthrie nicknames that only people in Guthrie have and can call me. If people in Atlanta call me that, I'm like, don't call
what?
Me.
Yeah. Hey, before we jump into this conversation with Jeremy, would you please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review? It would mean the world to me. Also, shout out and much love to our sponsors, Kevin Kraft and his team over at State Farm, for allowing me the opportunity to be able to connect with people in this way. I believe that as we share our stories, we connect and community is even greater. Also, North Church Guthrie. I am actually sitting in the building of North Church Guthrie right now, so I'm thankful for the space to be able to do this. And so, both shout outs to them for just believing in the power of sharing our stories and giving me the opportunity to do this. So please go check them out. Also, a quick shout out to Heath Shelton for capturing the photos, typically when I'm doing an in-house episode. But not today, ladies and gentlemen, not today. It's going to feel like it's in-house, but it is not. I am sitting down with Jeremy. Jeremy is all the way in Atlanta, Georgia. And so, Jeremy, bro, thank you for being on today.
Man, thank you. Like, this actually means a lot to me to be on this podcast, because Guthrie is so central to who I am and what my foundation is. And I've seen some of your work, and I've seen like the in-person podcast, and I'm like, I'll never qualify for the in-person, but I would love to sit down with you and talk about Guthrie and life and all that. So thank you for reaching out to me to be a part of this, man. It's certainly an honor.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate you. Now, I love to always start out just so kind of people get a feel for you. I like to just ask, like, how would the people who know you the best, family, friends, describe Jeremy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I should put like a poll out to people and be like, what do you think about me? Of course, they're going to say all the good things, which
right.
I think they would say, you know, I'm kind, I'm honest, I care about people. Also adventurous. I mean, I'm here in Atlanta. I left Oklahoma when I was 20 years old without a really strong plan, just kind of a dream that I went on. So a dreamer and just a real person and care about people. So I think those are probably the things that would resurface if you were to ask the people close to me.
Yeah, and so talking about being a person who just loves people, I know you have family, you love them. Kind of tell us about your family.
Yeah, my family is pretty big, especially compared to, you know, I think about like my wife, she has a pretty small family. Whenever she's around my family, she's like, yeah, there's so many of you all. So several, you know, two brothers, two sisters, family, all of them are still in Oklahoma. So grew up in Guthrie from, kindergarten through freshman year in high school. And, you know, a lot of love in our family. I come from, you know, product of divorce. So it was back and forth between Guthrie and Oklahoma City. And but one thing that was common between my households was just really loving people, honoring each other and building each other up. So, like, I love my family, man. They are, like, certainly woven into everything that I do.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Now, is it you also have some family that went to OU play ball, right?
That's the word on the street, man. So, yeah, my son played football for Oklahoma for 3 years, Jaden, and transferred to Arkansas, which, you know, I know some Sooner fans were, you know, most actually tend to understand, because it was also at the time when Lincoln Riley left. So that took a lot of attention off of him going to Arkansas. But, yeah, for him to grow up in Atlanta and, you know, me indoctrinating him into the Sooner lifestyle, like, he was a big fan of OU growing up. So for him to go to his dream school and have that shot was, I mean, I can't even imagine. And though things didn't pan out there like he would have loved to have, just to be able to experience and do that and have a dream since you were a kid and actually fulfill it, like, is pretty awesome. So really happy for him.
Yeah, no, that is a really big deal to be able to play collegiate ball, especially D1 for one of the historic institutions like the University of Oklahoma. But then also if transferring over to Arkansas, that's not, you know, like that's big time as well. And so that's really cool. Tell me, what was that like as a father to kind of go through that process of having your kid recruited? I'm sure if he's been recruited by OU, there's other schools. You know, oftentimes we only get to hear it from the news outlets of kind of this journey of doing that. I'm just curious now that we brought that up, what was that like for you? Cause that's a part of your story.
Yeah. There was a mix of emotions through it all. I mean, certainly when you have a child who has a talent and is being recruited by top tier programs across the country, like it's pretty cool, you know? And at the time, he was the number one wide receiver in the country. And like that, it just seemed weird to me because wherever we would go on these recruiting trips, like I was the guest, like I'm the parent, like, is this your guest? I'm like, no, I'm his father. Like he's the guest, you know? But for that to be the case is like, it's also tiring. And you also see the ugly side of colleges and recruiting. And, but I mean, I wouldn't change. It's a really cool experience to have, but there's also a lot of, just kind of like sliminess about it all, you know, because to me, it's almost become sports as entertainment, and the entertainment industry is pretty grimy and you see a lot of that. So, I'm happy that he had that experience. And, you know, there's a lot of parents across the country who are going through something similar. So it's really hard to determine what's real and what's not, because every coach is going to give you like, we're going to build our program around your son. And, you know, he's going to start and making all these promises that really just it's just recruiting tactics. But overall, you know, got to go and experience some cool college games. And that was really cool. Met these coaches and got an inside view on sports, which is, I mean, it's amazing in that respect. You know, if you're a sports fan, it's like incredible.
Yeah, and I think that was the thing that I felt like just watching through social media, kind of some of y'all's journey. I felt like the thing that was exciting was like you are a true OU fan, you're a true sports fan. It felt like, and to see your excitement going through the process and all of that just through social media was really cool. And again, I've never been through that, and always curious to hear it from somebody who actually has, and then to have a child who has a top tier talent like that. It just always has been intriguing and interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, I'll say like when he signed with OU, because he knew, but he didn't tell me. So I guess he knew for a while he was going to sign. And, you know, I'd kind of resolved like, okay, he might go to Georgia, even though he decommitted. They were still on the table, and Miami and Tennessee. So when he did sign, I was like, you know, being an OU fan, like I remember back on the playground, and my old classmates can attest to this. Like we are, you know, our names are the players. We're representing those players on the playground playing football. So I'm like, wow, like I grew up, my family went to OU, parents, grandparents. So for him to do that, like it was amazing. Like these jerseys, I don't know if you can see them on there because of the way the screen is cut, but you know, I've got his jerseys in the background. So to have like an OU jersey with my name, like, that's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool. So at the end of the day, I have a jersey that has Hazelwood on the back through my son, and it's all good. So that part is like a dream come true. But there's also the dark side, and it's like, let me squish that out. Let's focus on the positive, you know, and let's frame it that way.
That's good. Yeah, that's what we have to do oftentimes in life. It's just kind of like, let's look at the positive in this thing. We don't want to just ignore and act like the dark side's not there. But, man, you got to continue to keep your eye on the positive parts of it.
Sure.
Now, talking about the playground back in the day, talking about being in Guthrie, tell me what you remember most about Guthrie America.
Gosh, Guthrie America is – it's a charming town, as the headlines and articles will say. Growing up in Guthrie, it's kind of like you don't really know what you have until you leave it, or until you kind of grow and evolve. You know, when you're in it, you're just like, oh, this is school. You know, I hate school and can't wait for May to come around so we'll be out of school. But along the way, it's like the friendships that I've created in Guthrie, I still have today, even in Atlanta. Like there's classmates that I talk to, whether on the phone or through social media. It's a sense of community. And it's kind of like, at least when I was there, its own world, you know, where it's like it's town life. And sometimes you discount that because you're like, oh, I'm in this boring old town. But then when you grow, you're like, I really appreciated the way that I grew up. And because it is smaller, like everybody knows everybody. So it doesn't matter what race you are, whatever. It's like everybody's just cool. And that's one thing that I really liked about Guthrie. It's like it gives you perspectives on different people, and because we all are from this same town. So, you know, growing up, like my friends were my experiences and my friends, sports, like everything has created like kind of this sense, like humble beginnings, if you will, and something that even in a big city like Atlanta, like Guthrie is still in me, and people get to see that in me. Just the way that I communicate and treat people, like we're all from the same town, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good. So you would have been graduating class 95, right? So you're in the same class as my wife. Okay. Cause
correct.
Bernadette talks this morning before I came to jump on. Yeah. I was just like, hey, give me some Jeremy stories. Like what?
Oh
what
boy. Oh man. I can only imagine. I'm sure. All right. I'm just going to zip it and let you go. Go ahead. Yeah.
No. And so, I mean, only like whenever you talk about somebody and somebody starts smiling immediately, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, you know, that was a cool person, or that was a good person. And that was her, just her, in our discussion about you, was just Jeremy was that guy that was just always around, always fun. And then she says, and he was always rapping. Like there was always.
Yeah, that's true.
She said he would always turn something into rapping. Is that true? Like what? And how did you fall in love with hip hop, if I can ask that?
No, you could ask that. I mean, that's why I'm in Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta when I was 20 to pursue that dream of doing music. So, yeah, how did I fall in love? I think, you know, the earlier days for me, like Beastie Boys, Run DMC, Public Enemy, Boogie Down Productions, Big Daddy Kane, like MC Hammer, like all these artists, like it was just something like the beat, the poetry. It was just different, and it resonated with me. A white kid in Guthrie, Oklahoma, like somehow it resonated with me. I didn't have a hard life growing up, so it was the stories, but it was also the way the energy and the way the music made me feel, and I just latched onto it, and I couldn't get enough. Like I wanted to hear more and more and more. So that's kind of it. And as far as like, you know, I started writing, it was actually after I left Guthrie. When I moved to Putnam City North was where I finished high school, was when I really started writing. Before then, I was really just a fan of the music.
Yeah.
And I probably was rapping here and there, but it wasn't really until I left Guthrie and moving to a new school where I knew nobody and coming from a town where I knew everybody and was loved, accepted, and popular, and not meaning that like in a, you know, I'm all this or that. It's just, that's just how it is. Like, you know, you have your school and your people behind you. Going to a school where I didn't know anybody, and I'm like sitting by myself at the lunchroom table in a school that I know nobody. So I'm like, I'm just keyed into my Walkman and writing rhymes over beats. And it was kind of a sad time in my life because I moved away from my friends and everything that was a part of me, and starting over, it was very lonely. But that was really how I got through, was with the music.
That's cool, man. And I think that that's oftentimes kind of how people can find something that they really love, is kind of like, this was the thing that got me through whatever that may have been. And so to hear you talking about writing and utilizing that to do that transition to a new school is incredible, in the sense of like you had that to make that happen for you. But we'll come back to that, because I want to know about you transitioning to Atlanta,
sure.
Doing music and all that stuff, because I think that's great. All right, kind of going back to Guthrie, which schools do you remember from the time that you were there? Which one stood out to you? Was there any teachers? Who are some friends that you still keep in touch with that people would remember?
All right, so schools that I remember, all the schools, Banner, Central.
Oh, wow, wait a second. Oh, you were the Banner?
Oh, come on, man. Yeah. I remember my first day of school at Banner. I was scared out of my mind. I remember I cried. My stepmother dropped me off, and I was crying. I did not want to go into that building. There was like a smell about it, like burnt oil or something. I didn't know where I was going, some institution. I didn't really understand the concept of school. And that first day, and matter of fact, I'd have to ask her, but I feel like she may have had to come get me the first day of school because I just was like, I don't know what is happening. But yeah, man, Ben, I remember, gosh, man, bring up all my childhood trauma of school. No, I remember like Mrs. King, and I don't know where Mrs. King is nowadays. I don't know if she's alive. She seemed to be a younger teacher, so I'm assuming she's alive. She may hear this. I don't know. But that was like the first time that I got like discipline. Like I came out the gate, man. You know, kindergarten.
Kindergarten. So Miss King was at Banner. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I remember I was talking during the Pledge of Allegiance or something, and she was like, let me see your hand. And I was like, okay. And she smacked my hand with a ruler. And I was like, dang, she just smacked me with a ruler. They don't do that nowadays. You know, these kids need to be smacked with rulers nowadays. But that happened, what? I was like 5, 6 years old, and I still remember that. Like, oh, man, okay. So, but no, I remember that. So these are all, I remember every school had its own chapter, its own story, friends that I keep in touch with. Matter of fact, I just saw, Denzel Mitchell,
last
month. Yeah. He was actually in Atlanta. We went to, concert together, man. So, and every now and then we keep in touch, people through like Asa Nelson. Let's see who else, I don't talk to people regularly on the phone, but I will say like through like, you know, messages here and there, like those are probably the main two.
Gotcha. Where's Denzel at now?
He's in Baltimore.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Cause he got the kids at the hoop. He's doing the gardening stuff. Like, right.
Yeah, man. Hey, he's bringing Guthrie to Baltimore, man. Bringing the country to the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's doing his thing, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I follow him on Instagram. I need to get him on. I follow him on Instagram, and it's been really cool to watch him. And we spent some time where I think for a minute there we were at Langston together because I went back to college late.
Yeah.
And he was at Langston during that time. I feel like then they ended up moving. He got married, I think, and ended up moving to Baltimore or whatever and stuff. So that's legit, man. So
Hold on. Let me say real quick too before you get to the next question, because we're talking about people, and I'm thinking like any of my basketball people, man, because my basketball team was my family, like straight. Like I was cool with folks outside of basketball, but you know, Santon, Roland, you know, even Willis, Brian Reed, like all these people, Keontae, like these were the people that I miss them when I move, because especially like that coming off of junior high, freshman year, like we were together all the time. So, and I wish, and we keep up with each other, but for me, not as much as I would have liked over the years. So if they're listening, holler at your boy, man. Reach out to me.
Yeah, that's legit. So did you go through all of your freshman year in Guthrie?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so we were in high school for a minute then. I mean, so I was a senior when you were the first. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was probably just, you know, I was just another face in the hall to you. You were like, I'm out of here. I don't know these freshmen.
I'm done. Even though I ended up marrying one.
Exactly. You, like I said, that's, you know, your wife is one of Guthrie's royalty, man. So
she's
an amazing person.
Yeah. No, that's so funny. Okay, so we'll come back. We'll bounce back and kind of forth.
Yeah,
but I want to talk about moving to Atlanta, because I feel like that's a huge part. Like at 20, just getting up and going to Atlanta, this big city. Talk to me about that. What was that about?
Yeah, that was really like when I was in college. So I went to OU, and you know, started back in high school writing. Saving money, like I was busing tables on weekends at the Black Eyed Pea, which is no longer there on Northwest Expressway. But so it became like when I was 15, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to pursue music, but I also want to get my degree because I want to understand business. Like, my goal was like, I want to be an artist and I want to have a record label or a music production company. be an artist for a while, put out albums, see the world, and then kind of fall back into producing and developing other artists. So that was my plan at 15 years old. So started at OU, connected with a producer and studio in Oklahoma City, and kind of created like a music family there. And it got to a point where I was just like getting this itch. I'm like, man, I really want to see how far I can take this music. So, and it's not going to be in Oklahoma because, as you know, Oklahoma is not necessarily the hot spot for hip hop. So at the time it was like New York, LA, or Atlanta. And like New York is too cold. LA is too Hollywood. Atlanta, like around that time, it was like Outkast was coming out. Like Jermaine Dupri was doing some things out there. The sound was just different. And I had an aunt that lives in Atlanta. So my friend that I was doing music with, I was like, look, man, I kind of had a heart to heart with him. I was like, look, I really want to pursue this music. I want to come to Atlanta and I want you to come with me because I want to keep the group together and see what we can do. But if you don't, man, I'm going. Like, this is something that I feel like I need to do. So, you know, he thought through it and he was like, I'm in, you know. So we moved out to Atlanta for a summer. And the first show that we did was like an Apollo style show where, you know, they'll boo you off stage if they don't like you. And it was put on by one of the radio stations out here, like the top hip hop station. And, you know, we're like, of course, like we're the only white people in the building. And we ended up winning the whole show. So we were like, all right, we're not getting this in Oklahoma. So that's it. Like, we're moving because we tried it out for a summer. When that happened, we're like, that's it. Confirmation. We are where we need to be. So ended up bringing all of our stuff from Oklahoma. And, you know, at this point, it's not a game anymore. It's for real. We have to figure out how to do life. We have to get jobs now. And I ended up finishing school at Georgia State. But that was what that transition was like, man. It was like having a goal and pursuing it, and not because I never wanted to be like, you know, gosh, I wonder what would happen. You know, what would my life be like if I didn't go to Atlanta? Like, I'd be here in Oklahoma and I'm sure it'd be fine, but that was where my dream was. So I needed to follow it. And I am where I am today because I followed a dream. It wasn't necessarily, it didn't pan out how I thought the dream would look, but I think that's how life is. You know, when you have that calling and you may think it is your dream for your life, it actually is a journey that takes you to where you're really supposed to be.
Man, that's so. You do that, you stay after that summer. We now know that you've been there for 20 years.
Yeah.
Your dream doesn't pan out, right? You go there, mm-hmm. you have this dream or something. So something happens. Something happens to where you got to make this decision. Like, okay, this dream isn't happening. What was that transition like to where, like, now this is where I live at. I'm here. Job-wise, like, kind of tell me about what that looked like for you.
Yeah. And that was the hard part because, you know, the realization that this isn't the dream that I had became not a nightmare, but it became something that I started to despise and resent. So for me, it was really having to rediscover myself because from 15 to my late 20s, I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So when that happened, I was like, well, what am I supposed to be doing with my life now? Jaden was born. So I was a dad at that point. And also my priorities shifted where I'm like, this child means more to me than music. So I need to provide a life for him. But how can I do that? And what do I do now that I'm not doing music? So, cause I was working a corporate job the whole time. Cause you know, you need money, you have to live, but it was really a job just to sustain me. I had no passion, no interest. In fact, I really didn't like the work I was doing, but you know, you sacrifice that to try to accomplish your dream. But now it was like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I don't want to work in a job my whole career that I don't like. So, and that's kind of the preface of how the work that I started doing on myself, which became the book that I put out, which was like Finding Your Edge. So I went back to school here in the Atlanta area and got my master's degree, did a lot of work on myself, gained like insight, you know, emotional intelligence, and really took time to sit and plan out what my talents are, what my passions are. And what do I feel like my purpose is based on this? And it led me to starting my marketing consultancy. So I have a digital marketing consultancy. And then even beyond that, I'm like, this is not my purpose, but it's my talent, it's my passion. My purpose is really to impact people's lives and to be a messenger of hope to folks, because, you know, going through what I went through and even working a corporate job, it's like, I know I'm supposed to be doing something different than this. This is not why I was put on this earth. I'm not supposed to be in a cube looking at spreadsheets, because I don't even like spreadsheets, but I have a talent for it, but I don't like it. So what am I supposed to be giving back to the world? And so that was really, and there's a lot of people that are in that position right now. People might be listening to this podcast, you know, in a cube, like, I really don't like my job and I know I'm supposed to be doing something different. And the difference is like, man, do something about it. And it's not going to happen overnight, but just start taking those steps and discovering yourself and blocking out those distractions so you can get where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, you know, you hit on something, and that's the reason I was pretty fascinated about getting you on, because I've, again, through social media, through having a little bit of connection because of my wife and just kind of hearing your story, I knew that there was that transition from Oklahoma to Atlanta, which to me, I'm like, that's mind-blowing, right? And then the second part of that, I heard about you then leaving your corporate job to start your own thing or do your own thing. And so I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, he's done this twice. And oftentimes the biggest hurdle for people is to make those transitions. And so I was like, I got to get him on. I need to hear it. Not even for me, but talking about bringing people hope. It's kind of like, hey, here's Jeremy's story. Here's this Guthrie America story. To me, it's a Guthrie America story because you're from Guthrie. This is where you originated from. But the big picture is like, how do we bring people hope? Let me get people on this podcast to tell their story, because we can give people hope. It allows for us to connect. But talk to us about this last one. Like, because I may be wrong, I want to make sure I'm correct. You did leave your corporate job to start your own thing. Tell me about the last day at work. Like, what was that like make that jump?
Yeah, there were a couple of things, and I'll tell a quick story that kind of leads up to that. When I was in grad school, we had a residency that we had to do in Romania for 10 days. And my job that I worked for, my corporate job, wasn't going to let me take off work. And now keep in mind that this corporate job was actually helping to pay for some of my tuition. So I'm like, you're paying some of my tuition, but you're not going to let me go on this piece that I need. It's a requirement, a mandatory requirement to fulfill my education, but they weren't going to let me go because of what they call, quote unquote, needs of the business. And I know me saying that just triggered somebody listening right now, because they've heard that in their job somewhere. And so I was telling my manager, I'm like, well, look, I have to go. This is a requirement. I can't graduate if I don't have it. I'm like, so what would happen if I call out sick and I say, you know, I'm not going to be able to come to work? And they're like, well, if you're telling me right now that you're going to call out sick, you know, a month from now, then, you know, that's a problem. I was like, okay. I was like, well, like I have to go on this. So basically, the long story short piece is I went to Romania, not knowing if I would have a job when I came back, because he basically told me, if you do that, I can't guarantee you'll have a job when you come back. And at the time I was interviewing with a couple of other marketing agencies, but I really went on a hope and a prayer to Romania, and not knowing, like, I wasn't making a lot of money at the time. So I really was like, I have to do what I feel is best for my family in the long term. And I can't be controlled by a threat of losing a job where I wasn't getting paid that well anyways. So here's how it all worked out, man. We had a layover in Germany. And when I was in Germany, I got an email from a company that I had interviewed with saying, we want to hire you, and your start date will be, you know, it was basically a week after I got back. So to have, like, you know, I'm going to call it what it is, man, to have God work like that in my life, knowing that this is where you are, and that confirmation, like, that was everything. And I do feel like, you know, when you are going after something, there will be pushback for sure. There will be some tension, but these are also areas in which you push through and grow because you know what's right for you and your family and your life. So I ended up getting that job. So that's the first part of the story. The second part is, when you work for marketing agencies, typically they hire people whenever they bring on new clients because they need more headcount to do the work. And then when they lose clients, they usually shed headcount. And so that cycles every 2 to 3 years. And that happened to me a couple of times where I love my job, I love the work, but you know, they lost clients, so I was out of a job. And that happened a couple of times, to a point where even my wife was like, is this how it's going to be with your work with as a marketer? I was like, I don't want it to be this way, but apparently with an agency, that's how it works. So that's when I was like, it didn't seem like much of a risk to start my own thing. Like if I'm going to be, I can have more control over my destiny if I create my own piece. And like, I've been blessed, you know, just client. I don't even do marketing for my own marketing business. Like it's referrals and I don't spend any money on advertising. Like in my business, I've had it for 10 years now and it's been good. So when you're supposed to do something, the doors will open along the way. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but like when that door seems like it's closing, it's not closed. Like just keep pursuing it and overcome.
That's good. Yeah, man. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I think that's the key. It's like, it's not easy, but if you get out there and put in the work, it can happen for you.
Yeah.
Right.
It will happen.
It will happen. What's been some of the biggest rewards out of you taking that risk and making that jump?
Man, it's just the freedom of life in a sense. And entrepreneurship is not for everybody. So I keep that in mind when I talk about entrepreneurship and some people don't, it's not for you and you need to work somewhere. And I mean that in a good way. Like you need the structure for whatever, you know, whatever reason. So I don't knock anyone who's not. Like I always encourage people, if you have that in you, to pursue a business and see what happens. But don't be dumb about it. Like I didn't just quit and start my company. It's like I was doing both at the same time. I had my company started while I was working a 9-to-5 so that I wouldn't put my whole family at risk. So, but I think for people who are, you know, in that mode where they're trying to figure out what they should do, whether it's start a business or stay where they are, it's like, you're going to know what is put on your heart, what your talents are. Yeah. But if you're feeling something within you, like you're not satisfied with where you are. And I know some people are just never satisfied and that's okay. But let's look at like what your talents are and what your calling is and pay attention to that because there is something there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. Yeah, I love that you talk about some people aren't built for entrepreneurship because entrepreneurship is definitely not, you have to find your check.
Yeah.
You get to make sure you get that check every week or every month, however that needs to come for you, because you got to pay those bills. And then it's a whole nother layer when you start adding employees or getting contracting people out. And then you got to pay them as well.
Right.
And I don't know about you. So of course, there's an entrepreneur side of me and everything, but the wife, she wants to know where the benefits is coming from, that health insurance, and when is that next check so we can feed these kids?
Yeah,
and that's not easy.
Yeah, no, it's always like, you know, you have to pay for your own insurance, and the costs are stupid, so it's like okay, but it's like. That is one thing I miss about working somewhere is like your costs for insurance aren't as much, and more companies have started to make employees pay for their insurance, but because they're a bigger company, like it doesn't cost as much. But you know, fortunately, man, I've been really blessed with the business, and you know, there've been, you know, highs and lows with it, but overall, man, it's like the gratification of creating something and having it be successful and being able to touch people's lives. Cause I do a lot of work with nonprofits, and knowing that the work that I'm doing is actually, you know, saving an animal or putting a roof over someone's head, or someone's able to eat tonight, because I had something to do with it. Not to say it's all because of me, but just to know that your work is connected to something bigger, like that's everything, man. And I have a security that I've never had working in a job where I'm like, all right, you know, even in a corporate or agency, I'm like, hey, if management changes, that might be my job. So for now, it's like, I'd have to lose a lot of clients to really be worried about that. So I have a lot more freedom and man, confidence too. It's like knowing what I've been able to accomplish. Like it just builds me up. Like I feel just so empowered that, and very confident to where even when I give people advice, like I'm speaking from experience, not what I've heard. So it's very fulfilling for me.
That's good. Okay. So I'm gonna go down these list of questions, but before we do that, I want to ask you, about the book. We got to talk about the book, right? And so when did you write the book?
I wrote the book over a 10-year period. So it was something that I started probably while I was in grad school. And I was writing it and worked on it for about 7 years. This is my first book. I actually put another book out before this one came out. And that other book was about digital fundraising for nonprofits. It's more like kind of textbook. Here's how to do X, Y, Z. But this book, Finding Your Edge, was so personal to me that I wanted to get it right. And I can be a perfectionist, even with music. Like, it would take me so long to release music because I want everything to sound right. The hi-hat needs to be tweaked a certain way. Like, the kick drum needs to sound a certain way. And I would just obsess over it. And it was the same with this book. So after 7 years of tweaking it, I set it down. And I was like, I need to live life a little more because there's something missing from this book. So I live life a little more. And I was like, God, thank you for giving me these extra years of life, because if, you know, I passed and that book never came out, I mean, I guess it would matter to me, but maybe not the world. I don't know. But I was alive to. So last year, I was like, I'm ready. Like, I've lived enough and I'm ready to tie this up and put it out. And even then, like, to me, it's not a perfect work because I can tweak this thing till I'm 89 years old and it'll still never be right, you know. But I'm like, it's time to put it out. The message is there. I'm proud of the work that I put into it. It's taking stories of my life, but it's also has a framework for people who are going through change, whether it's graduation or loss, you know, depression, transition. Even there's people who've read it that are entering into retirement. They're like, your book was really helpful to me because I'm not really sure what to do next. So this book is really kind of rediscovering yourself, and it has a whole model, EDGE, which is it's a whole acronym. So it's eliminate distractions, discover yourself, generate goals, and enact discipline. So that's like the step-by-step model. And of course, I expand on that through the chapters and give you tools and tips. And at the end of each chapter, there's questions for journaling for you to really kind of tag in with yourself. And, you know, so I'd recommend, like, if you're reading the book, get a journal and keep track of it, because it really is, it's not a workbook. It's a regular book, but it is a workbook in a sense that you're going to get out of it the work that you put into it.
That's good. For people who are listening, who are interested in writing a book, where would you tell somebody to start? Like, what was that process like for you? Where would somebody start? How would you say, in order to get through a book, you need to do one or two things?
Yeah, I think just outlining it. For me, it started with an idea, like this EDGE model. But then it was like, okay, I need to create an outline for this. So the outline helped me create the chapters. And then reflecting back on my life and the chapters and the content, what are some stories that I can create that will go along with this? And that's the way I did. And that's, you know, for me, even if this is, of course, a nonfiction book, if you're writing fiction, I think it's still the same. Develop those characters, outline what those chapters will look like. To me, that was the easy part. You know, the hard part was, now that the book is done, what do I do now? Because I wanted to get it published. And so I did all this research, like how to get your book published. And I sent like cover letters and samples of chapters to a lot of publishers. And I had like this list. It was probably like 200 publishers. And I think I heard back from like three. It was kind of frustrating. But then I was like, going back to my music days, like, I wasn't signed to a label, but I'm put the albums out. I put three albums out. So I'm like, I don't need a publisher. So how can I self-publish? Because to me, the book is just the first step. You know, it gives me something to stand on for my message. Now I can be like, hey, I have a book. So let's do a workshop. Like, let me come keynote. Let me speak to your audience. So I self-published through Amazon. And I worked with a book designer, which I didn't do on my first book. And I worked with a different proofreader. So I had a little bit of a team this time. And then I just did a bunch of marketing around it because I'm a digital marketer. So, you know, the marketing piece to me was fun because I created like different images with different excerpts from the book. And then I created a playlist on Spotify and Apple Music for songs that inspired the book. So I had a lot of fun with doing that, and even shot like a short, like 5-minute documentary about the process of writing the book and the story behind the book. So it's something that I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. And I don't have a publisher to say, no, you can't do this. Like, it's all my vision and it's everything that I wanted to do. So I'm very proud of the work that I put together for the world. Hopefully, even if it's one person, gets this book and they're like, this really helped me out. Like that's everything to me.
Did whenever you wrote the book, like sometimes like if there has to be this constant push of the book, mm-hmm. In my head, and this, yeah. the way that I think about it, because if it's like anything else, it just kind of sits there and it, you know, it rest in peace kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
When do you stop promoting the book, and are you still promoting the book actively? And what does that look like yeah. today? Is it different from when you first started to now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a good question, because even for me writing a book that could be categorized as a self-help book, like in my mind, I'm like, why would I want to do that? Because there's a billion, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but there's a billion self-help books out there. And who am I? Why would people listen to my message? Like people can, whatever I'm saying, they can go read a book from somebody else. So even getting into a space that's already crowded, how do I differentiate myself? That was one little mogul that I had to get through in my mind. And for people listening who are contemplating writing a book, you know, what I landed on is like, my voice is my voice. My stories are unique to me. My model that I have is unique to me. So people may like my message. They may not. There's certain quote unquote thought leaders in the space that people love, but those same thought leaders, they rub people the wrong way. So, you know, my message is not for everybody. The way that I talk, the way that I deliver words may rub people the wrong way. They may not like the sound of my voice. I don't know. But people that do latch on, like that's who the book is for. So the way that I market it now is like, I've created a body of work. I want people to read it. I want the impact. I don't want it to read it for me, because this is my get rich slow scheme. Like self-publishing, you're not making a lot of money. You know, to me, it's like the impact that I can have through the book, you know, through speaking when I can get to larger audiences. So for me, this is like, I'm just putting it in my backpack, like literally and figuratively speaking, everywhere that I go. And I'm going to talk about my book, talk about my message. And it's one of my toolkits right now. So for me, it's not something that I put out and it's done. Like it's perpetually a part of my business, a part of my conversations. And that's also probably the difference between self-publishing, because if you had a publisher, you'd probably have a window where they're really going to market it. And now we need to work with the other authors that are putting books out, and we need to market their book. So, but for me, it's like, this is the next trajectory of my life. Like I have a digital marketing consultancy now, but the work that I'm opening up and expanding on is more this purpose-driven work. So this is like not the pinnacle, but it's really like the jump off for that work that I'll be doing.
Man, that's good, man. There's so much more I want to go into this, because similar to, you know, I have the Go Win, and yep. I've been doing Go Win since 2003, right? And so it mm-hmm. is my life. It is what I want to push forward to people to help them go further, better in their stories.
Yeah.
Similar to the reason I do the podcasting is because I do get the opportunity to hear people's stories and share those stories with other people. And oftentimes I'm really trying to, while I'm listening to people talk, I'm trying to discover what are the right things that they've been consistent in to achieve whatever mm-hmm. the win is that they're chasing after. What is that thing that's helping them make progress toward that thing? And so I had to come to that realization too. It's like, this is a life work for me. It's kind of like Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. And John Maxwell, these guys have been teaching the same curriculum for the most part, the same thought, the same thing, and built empires around it. And so similar to what you're saying, I had to learn with Go Win. It's like, this is a lifelong thing, and it doesn't happen overnight. And I'm excited about what you're going to do with your vision there.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. And I appreciate like your positivity, your content. And even with Go In, like that's the foundation. You know, Dave Ramsey and John Maxwell have both put out many books, but that foundation is the same. So it doesn't mean like you do Go In and now we're on to the next one. It's like, how can we expand that? And, you know, I think as you put out work, you through feedback about the book, or even you realizing that there were some things that were unsaid. So how can I take those unsaid things that matter to people and I can write another book or do something different, but it's still all surrounding Go In, you know, and that is the message. So, and I mean, I would love to see, like, even with my book, like I'd love for it to be something that following a Dave Ramsey model, how he's partnering with churches and organizations, and they're actually pushing his content out and his models and everything. Like mine, I have a whole program called Edge Academy that corporate can latch onto, churches can latch onto, all this. So I've got it all just sitting there. So I've got this mastermind in my head where I'm like, we're going to focus on this for now, then this, then this, then this. So it's step-by-step process. But to get back to what you were saying, it's like, it's the discipline. It's like doing something every day, even if it's small. Like you got to just keep pushing forward. And, you know, person like you, like this podcast that you have, the content you put out, man, like you're putting positivity out into the world and you're doing it consistently. And I know every day is not a good day for you. I don't know what happened to you this morning before you jumped on this podcast. You know, you could have had a rough day. Maybe you had a good day, but when the lights are on, you got to show up for people. People need you. They need your message. They need that positivity. And that's what you're going to give them.
Yeah, man, that's good. And talking about people bringing you in and letting you share your message and what you're bringing to people, Nikki Hedge, another one of your classmates.
For sure, man.
Brought you out to Oklahoma City. And I do a lot of work with Nikki, but she was like, everybody loved him. It was a packed room. People wanted him, you know. And so it was really excited. She was excited. You would have thought she was doing the one bringing the message. Like, she was so excited for you. And that was so cool.
Nah, it was cool, man. I enjoyed that. And shout out to Nikki. Hopefully, bring me back, Nikki. No, and we've already talked. So we're working on some other things. But she gave me the opportunity really with my book, because my book came out last year. And that was the first, I guess we'll call it, not really a workshop, but, you know, it was at a conference. So it was like an hour long to really do a session focused around my book. And so for me, I was a little nervous because I'm like, I think it's good content, but I don't know how people are going to receive it. But it went so amazing, man. Like, I got a standing ovation. Like, I had people coming up to me, like, literally in tears afterwards and talking about the things that I said. And like, for me, like, that's just like, that gets my heart. And it's confirmation that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So, like, that's why I need more of that. I want to impact people that way, because I vibe off of that energy. It fills me up. It fills other people up. So I'm like, let's get more of that work.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Now, this is me as a speaker. Now I'm talking to you as a speaker. So we're talking to each other in all sorts of ways. Now, do you do a slideshow? What does your presentations normally look like? Is it do you have a workbook to go along with your book? What is that? Or is it more like keynote, just speaking?
Yeah, it's usually like a keynote. So, you know, I'm a Mac person, so keynote. So I will use slides. I can do a workbook depending on what the session and time and everything looks like. You know, I can be versatile with whatever the requirements are. So if it's a longer session, then yeah, I can do a workbook. For the one that I did last year, like an hour long session, it's not a lot of time, especially for the content that I'm covering. But I like to include breakouts because I don't want it to be something where you're just listening to what I'm saying. I want you to listen and do while we're in this room together, because when you leave this room, you have life to deal with. You got to go back to your office, your kids, your family, your whatever. And you're just not going to do the work most of the time unless you're really dedicated to it. Most people want to do it, but they don't create the time to do it. So while we have this sacred time together, we're going to walk through how to do this, and we're actually going to start the work. So, you know, my goal with that is to, like, let's start it here. And now that you've actually started it and you see how that feels to start this work, that when you leave the room, you're actually going to follow up and continue working on yourself. So that's really the way that I would do my workshops.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. No, similar, you know, go win. I'll do a keynote. Meaning like just a straight up motivational talk, so to speak, or workshops. I love doing one-on-one sessions. You know, I've built a workbook to where I'll just sit down with somebody and do one-on-one sessions. Yep. The next thing really trying to jump into is coaching around it, like just doing coaching calls and things of that nature. And so a leadership program is what I'm thinking too out of it, and just kind of focusing on young people. I love that 11th, 12th grade, helping people transition into life and building their go-in plan around just my thoughts and how the go-in approach looks. So all of that, man.
Yeah. No, I just started I did a soft launch of a coaching program. I think I posted it on my website last week. I haven't done anything to promote it. I guess this is it now. You hear it first on the Guthrie podcast, Guthrie America. Yeah, but I have a coaching program. So that's one thing that I'll be getting into more, because similar to you, like, there's a lot of similarities between your work and my work. And,
yeah,
you know, these two faces on this screen right here, this might be the 1-2 combo. And we're going to bring our stuff together at some point, man. Guthrie America is going to be representing somewhere. But I think that there's a lot of crossover in the messaging and the hope and really what we want for people, man, because, you know, I've never met you personally. I've seen your content. I know you're married to a classmate of mine who's a legend, who's beat me in tennis multiple times. But to see the positivity, like, those are the people that I want to be around. Like, who's putting positivity in the world? And to your comment earlier, it doesn't mean there's not negativity and a lot of other, because we need to acknowledge that too. But it's like, those, that dialogue that we have with ourselves and with others, like, let's be aware of those negative things, but let's, you can't move forward through negativity. Like, that's a downward spiral. So yeah, I think coaching, you doing coaching, like, all that, we should talk offline too and map out a couple of things. I'd love to share resources. I might have some ideas that can help you, and you might have some ideas that can help me.
Yep, for sure, for sure. Man, I don't know how much time you get, but I got like a list of like 100 more questions for you, but let's do this.
No.
These are just kind of some either or kind of things, and you can dive into them as much as you want to, right?
Yeah.
Apple or Android?
Apple. I don't even know Android. Come on, man. Hold on. Oh, man. How do I leave this combo? Man. Oh, really? Oh, man. I mean, I'm literally like, I got the, I know this is AirPods, like, probably, this, I know, AirPods, phone, on my Mac, like, this is, I feel like a Mac commercial over here. Sorry. All right. Next question. What you got for me? And don't say like OU or OSU, because you know where I sit on that. So let's just skip past it.
We're not even going to mess with that, because I want people to keep watching.
Right.
What's the app you can't live without? What's the app on your phone that you can't live without?
Gosh, man. My calendar. I mean, that is an app. So if my calendar was removed from my phone, I would be living back in the 1200s. I'd be like, I don't even know. Let me look at the sun and see what time it is. That
calendar app moves you forward, huh?
Gosh. Yeah, if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't get done. And that's why, like, even my wife would be like, put it on your calendar, because she knows, like, if I don't put it on my calendar, like, it's going to go out.
Net, how do you do that? Do you look at your calendar the night before, or do you wake up early and you look at it to kind of gauge your day? Do you do a weekly review, like on Sunday, to kind of look at your week? How do you manage that?
Yeah, kind of all of the above. Like, I don't have a lot of anxiety generally as a person, but I do find myself having anxiety around time. Like, I'm one of these people that, like, I need to be on time to everything. And I need to end on time, but I'm cool here. Like, we're having a good combo, so I don't need to end on time here, because this is good combo. So I do, like, usually the night before, I'm like, let me just see if I have anything in the morning, because usually my mornings I have like an hour of time blocked out. I used to do it to when I was finishing my book to write, and now I use that time just to kind of get into the day, whether it's writing or reading, posting social media, something like that. But yeah, so also it's like, what do I have coming up this week? You know, if I have meetings away from my house, where do I need to be? Who am I speaking with this week? So yeah, I'm always looking at, like, and, you know, start of the day, I'm like, okay, here's what I have to do today. And it helps me just kind of work through my day. So my calendar looks like a Tetris. It's like, there's all these just little blocks here and there. But it keeps me on track.
That's good. All right. What's your go-to social media platform? You Facebook, Instagram, Twitter? Where you at? X?
Yeah, not X. For sure, not X. It has become Instagram. Used to be Facebook, but yeah, Instagram is my go-to now.
Favorite podcast to listen to? You on the road? What podcast are you? What podcast are you tuning into?
I mean, is it not Guthrie America? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, like, I'm not a big podcast person, which may be surprised, because I'm here with you on your podcast. And I am going to listen to this one to make sure I didn't sound like a fool.
No, you sound great.
Yeah. I dabble into podcasts here and there, but, like, I just listen to music all day. And probably 3 times a month, I'm like, I really need to start getting into podcasts more, but I just haven't done it. So I kind of skim different podcasts here and there.
Got you. Night owl or early bird?
Oh, man, my ideal self would be stay up till 3 o'clock and get up at 10. That's not my reality, but I'm definitely a night owl.
Gotcha. Bernadette is a major night owl. She's up all night. I like to go to bed early and get up early if I can.
Oh, gosh.
But it doesn't all that way. It's not always that way. Yeah. Hey, call or text? Which one do you want? A call or a text?
It depends on the person, man. Like, I can't, you know, some people are like, why are you calling me? You know, just shoot me a text. Other people's like, why are you texting me? I think the courtesy now is probably text first, because even if there's someone like, hey, you free to talk? It's so funny how behaviors change over time, even from people showing up at your house, ringing the doorbell. You know, nobody's answering that. And even now, if someone calls, even if it's a friend, you're like, I don't know if I want to talk right now. So, but depending on who it is, I'll answer. But I do prefer, I guess, the text.
Yeah. Introvert or extrovert?
Gosh, I'm actually a mix of both. When you get me talking or if you tag me in, like, I'm total extrovert. But find me in general, like, I tend to be an introvert. Like, if I'm at a networking party, I hate those. Like, I'm uncomfortable. It's hard for me to be like, hey, how you doing? What's your name? So I have to get over that myself. But good thing is, like, I'm married to an extrovert, so we have good energy together. But once you turn, like, you tag me in, hey, this is Jeremy, then I'm like, hey, how you doing? And I'm all in. But yeah, introverted until that extrovert comes out.
Got you. If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Man, I know this may sound cliche, but I would like to sit down with Jesus and be like, let's talk. You know, I think that would just be like a cool conversation. That would be like my go-to. There'd be other people, but I think I would start with him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. Dogs or cats? I just got to know where we stand, bro.
You see back here, this is a dog. That's Callie. So
you blur it out. I can't. Oh, am dog?
I? Oh, yeah. 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 You just see this little brown spot.
Yes, yeah.
So I'm going to go with dogs.
Okay. Got you. What's a fear you had to overcome?
Gosh, that is actually really, that's a good question, man. This one, you didn't give me this question.
No, I didn't give you these.
Gosh, I think a fear, man, I don't even know. I'm not like a fearful person. I'm trying to think of it's going to take me too long to think of that one. I wish I had heights or something like that, but I don't have something where I'm like, I really need to work to overcome this, but I'm sure I'm going to text you later and tell you.
Yeah, I'll add it. So we're going to get kind of some, what are you most grateful for?
Life, man. And everything that comes with it. Good times, bad times. To me, it's like this all-encompassing thing, like the people in my life, the experiences in my life, just in general, just being present, being able to see and experience all these different things. Like, it's such a gift.
One thing, what brings you the most joy in your life?
The most joy, I think when I have peace, when my family is good, those days where I talk to all of my kids in one day and like and when we're all together, like that brings me the most joy. I get joy out of other things, but if we look at peak joy, that's probably what it is.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I feel you on that. Kids, how many do you have? I don't know. Did we ever say how many?
Yeah, I have three. So I have Jaden, and then I have Nia and Amari, who are twins. They're 25, and Jaden is 23, just turned 23.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. So one of the things that I always got to ask people, and that is we use this hashtag here in Guthrie. It's also part of our chamber, and we say where community wins. What does it mean when you hear community wins?
Community wins to me is almost the epitome of my experience growing up in Guthrie. And I don't know if epitome is the right word. Let's just say it's the definition of, because I felt like Guthrie is such a, it's a close knit community. You know, there's, even when I was there, there were some tragedies that hit the town and the town kind of came together. I think community, because it's a town and it's not without its problems, but there seems to be, we're all in this together and there is a strong sense of community. I mean, go to the football games on Friday night and tell me what community means, you know, which is side note. When I that experience that I had growing up, like even now in my adulthood, I go to cities like even like Savannah, Georgia, which is a beautiful city. It reminds me of Guthrie. You know, I see things on TV like Friday Night Lights. I'm like, that reminds me of Guthrie, you know. So seeing these things in its community, you know, and I think it's the heart of the people and it's the relationship.
Yeah, that's good. What does choose Guthrie mean to you? And when we say choose Guthrie, it doesn't even have to really be Guthrie per se, but mm-hmm. we just use that hashtag to really talk about priority and really doing community in that way. What does it mean to you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was actually thinking about this earlier today, and you're kind of stealing my answer, because when I was thinking about what does choose Guthrie mean, I think it does mean community. It means fellowship. It means connecting with each other, because Guthrie has been intentional about bringing the town together for events. And I mean, gosh, 89ers, like, you know, there's these things that Guthrie does to facilitate community intentionally to do that. So, you know, that's what choose Guthrie means to me, like a community where there is support from people around you, whether it's through your church, because the church community is very, very live in Guthrie, or even your classmates. So that's what it is. Choose Guthrie is choosing community of people that are around you.
That's good, man. Hey, just real quick, last thought was, one of the things that people always talk about who left Guthrie and is the homecomings. They was like, yeah. Man, I thought homecomings was like this everywhere. Did you have that same experience? Like,
yeah.
Is that something that you've acknowledged since you left? Like, man. Oh, we don't close down streets and shut down towns for homecoming around here?
Right. No, that certainly is like a big deal. And that's one thing you certainly take for granted. Like, we have a whole parade for our homecoming. Like, it's not a joke. We don't just do it at like halftime. You know, it's like no. We're shut. The businesses are closed. There's writing on the windows of the businesses.
Yes.
It's a big deal. And I love that I was able to have that experience. Because, again, like when I watch Friday Night Lights, I'm like, man, that takes me back to my childhood, the way that the community rallies around football and sports.
Yeah.
I do miss those homecomings. And sadly, like I got to be on the fire truck. I think it was is fire truck only for seniors?
Yeah, fire truck's not for senior, but right, you probably were on the float, though.
Yeah, I was on the float, so I didn't get to do the fire truck, but that's all right, you know. Maybe one of these days I'm going to come and just jump on the fire truck with some seniors for one of the parades.
Well, I was going to say, man, your class acts like every homecoming is their homecoming. Like, Bernadette Nim, or I'm like, Bernadette, this is not y'all's. You know, because homecomings are normally reunions, class for class reunions.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not y'all's class reunion. You all think every year is y'all's class reunion.
Yeah, you can't say that to class of 95. And I know she's probably told you more times than you care to count that 95 is the best class to come out of Guthrie High School in the history of the state of Oklahoma. And it probably is. But yeah, and it's funny, even being in Atlanta, I'm like, man, every year, you know, I'm in this group chat or a Facebook group, and I'm like, dang, they're doing another reunion this year, which I'm for. I think it's great, and it speaks to community, especially with our class, because I don't know if it's just me, but I don't see other classes that do it the same. I know that there's some that are pretty close, but I'm like, our class is like, I mean, anybody could shoot me a message from my class, and I'm going to respond to them, and that's just kind of how I care about the people, man, and it's good to hear from old friends and catch up, so... there certainly is a community with class of 95. So yeah, why don't we? We should do that every year because we're class of 95. Come on through. We're having our 25th, 26th, 20. We're gonna do it even on the years that aren't multiples of five reunion.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. That's what I'm saying. Like this is class of 20. This is your 23rd year. You don't do a class reunion on your 23rd.
Right.
Yeah. But I love it. I love how that energy for her and her, you all, it's really something that I admire about her and her class and you all. And so, but I don't know if y'all the best class. 92, I'm pretty sure it's the best, greatest class ever, but we won't it's continue debatable. To debate about that. But you know,
I know. Don't make some calls. I'm about to be like, make some calls here. We're going to tag in. You're going to see some other faces pop up on this screen. Here's the link.
Just send the link out.
Right.
Send it out. Man, I so appreciate you doing this with me, man. I'm excited about what's ahead for you, and how you continue to have a heart for the community that you started in, which is Guthrie America. And man, tell people how they can find you, your book, all that. Any last plugs? Cool.
Yeah, for sure, man. Follow me on Instagram, jeremy.hazelwood. So if y'all from Guthrie, you know it's Hazelwood with an S, not a Z. If y'all really know me and then you grew up with me, you know it's Hazelwood with an S, not a Z. The book is available on Amazon. It's Finding Your Edge, How to Unlock Your Talent and Purpose. It's also on Audible, Kindle, and Apple Books. So I actually read the book too with this microphone. This is actually the mic that I used when I did music. So if you like my voice, get the audiobook. If you hate my voice, get the ebook or the paperback or the hardcover. So there's options, however you want to take in the content. But you know, if you're ready to make some changes in your life, get this book. I think it'll help you out. A lot of tools in there for you.
Bro, that's legit. That's really legit. You got the audio.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not going to waste this mic. I mean, this is like, this is, I got rid of all my studio equipment except this mic. I was like, I can't part with this mic. There's no way.
It sounds great too. What kind of mic is that?
This is a Neumann TLM 103. So yeah, okay. Look at it. It's like when I saw, I am a fan of Billie Eilish. Some people don't like her, but I think she's super talented. But I actually saw that this is the mic that she used as well. I was like, I got the same mic as this young lady who's putting out like millions of records. So I'm not getting rid of this. This is affirmation. This is the mic that I need for my life.
Well, you know what? What convinced me to get this particular mic was that they said Michael Jackson recorded Thrill on it. I'm like, if Michael Jackson recorded Thrill on this mic,
right,
this is the mic I need in my life.
Wait, how come you're not using that mic for our podcast? I feel like you've cheapened our podcast. I want you to speak into the Thriller mic for the podcast. What's up with that? Why do I get the handheld mic?
Well, if you know me, as my wife would say, I'm always changing and trying something out differently. And so what I'm talking through is still a Shure. It's still the same brand. But I said, let me try this out. Let me try something different.
Yeah. Well, you sound good, too, though. You sound great.
Yeah. Good. Man, thank you so much for being on, bro. And I look forward to sharing this with everybody.
Yeah, thanks
a lot. And we got to jump offline and talk even more.
For sure, man. Yeah, thank you for having me on. Shout out Guthrie, Oklahoma. Love you guys. And my classmates, people listening, thank you all. And Eddie, thank you for the work that you're doing, putting these stories out there, because people need to hear them. They need to find out more about Guthrie and even the work that you're doing. So thank you for using your platform in a positive way.
Well, I appreciate you. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you for hitting that play button for another episode of the Guthrie America podcast. And my last question to all of you is this: will your story be next?